a millennial born near the beginning of my generation, I don't recall having civics as an option when I was in grade school. If asked what they think civics refers to, most people might mention voting, elections, or maybe jury duty. Yeah, that's it. You gotta vote, you gotta serve jury duty if you get called in. And that's about it. The definition Merriam-Webster gives defines civics as a social science dealing with the rights and duties of citizens. So what exactly are these rights and duties, and why do they matter? The underlying assumption here is that we as citizens have the ability to shape our society, that we can collectively determine what society looks like. After all, we do live in a democracy, right? The premise of this podcast is that civic life is in major need of an overhaul and perhaps a reimagining altogether. If a massive resurgence in civic engagement were to take hold, I believe it is absolutely possible for us to create the world we want to live in. My name is Judd Staser, and this is Civic Tsunami. In this space, we will explore the aspects and obligations of being a citizen of the United States in the 21st century. In this first episode, I want to outline my intention for what this podcast is going to be and what the audience can expect. A lot of that is still up in the air, but I know a few things. There will be audio episodes released on a regular basis. And like most podcasts, we will deliver content pertaining to the core topic, which in this case is civic engagement. The exact configuration of this program will ultimately be shaped by the community I hope to build together. It will definitely evolve over time. In order to move toward this greater embrace of civics, we first need to understand why it is needed. A clear understanding of what we are facing as a society and as a species will inform what our civics should look like. There's no sugarcoating it. Humanity in the 21st century is riddled with crises. Many of these problems affect people all over the world, but I am, of course, speaking in the context of U.S. residency. Although the United States is the wealthiest country in the world, more than 10 million children live in poverty, and more than 70% of them are children of color, according to the Children's Defense Fund. More than 10% of U.S. households experienced food insecurity at some point during 2019, according to the U.S. Department of Agriculture, while more than 500,000 people are homeless on any given night. Medical debt is the number one cause of bankruptcy in the United States. The U.S. spends more money than any other country on health care, yet life expectancy is shorter, obesity is higher, and the rate of maternal and infant death is also higher, according to the Journal of the American Medical Association. Other developed countries, which have some form of universal healthcare system, outperform the U.S. in each of these categories. And no one goes bankrupt because they got sick. Despite accounting for only 4% of the global population, the United States imprisons 22% of all prisoners around the world. Of the more than 2 million incarcerated in the United States, 1 in 5 are for nonviolent drug offenses, according to the Prison Policy Initiative. While most states pay prisoners for their labor, they are most often paid less than $1 per hour. In a handful of states, including my home state of Georgia, they are paid nothing. A rapidly evolving economy shaped by decades of neoliberal policies is rendering greater shares of the population impoverished, or one emergency away from financial ruin. 1 year before the COVID-19 global pandemic, Forbes reported that 78% of working people in the U.S. live paycheck to paycheck. During the pandemic, millions of Americans fell into poverty as the wealth of billionaires soared. The world's energy supply remains heavily dependent on the extraction and consumption of fossil fuels. While efforts to curb this environmentally destructive addiction have been meager at best, More than 80% of global energy consumption is still dependent on this finite resource. And finally, as the situation continues to unfold in Ukraine, warmongering politicians and their media stooges clamor for greater escalations between the world's two most nuclear-armed military powers. While nuclear Armageddon has been narrowly averted in the past, it would only take one mistake to trigger a mutually assured destruction that would devastate all life on the planet. Of course, this is an incomplete list of crises and injustices we face. If we had a government that actually functioned to serve public need, all of the crises I just named could be meaningfully addressed or even ended by different types of legislation. Unfortunately, legislative solutions to these issues often go against the interests of corporations, and most, if not all, legislatures at state and federal level serve these corporate interests assiduously. Two articles published in 2014, one by NPR and one by Time magazine, reported that the majority of Congress are millionaires, as did another article published in 2020 on OpenSecrets.org. Compare that with just 8% of U.S. adults who are millionaires, according to a recent global wealth report by Credit Suisse. If 92% of American adults are not millionaires, but the majority of Congress who write and pass all the laws at the federal level are millionaires, what does that mean for our society, and who will the laws favor? Congress has no accountability to its constituents. An often-cited study by Princeton and Northwestern universities published in 2014 analyzed data on nearly 1,800 policies enacted between 1981 and 2002 in the U.S., including expressed preferences by average Americans as well as the affluent and special interest groups. The peer-reviewed study concluded, quote, "The central point that emerges from our research is that economic elites and organized groups representing business interests have substantial independent impacts on U.S. government policy, while mass-based interest groups and average citizens have little or no independent influence." End quote. Politicians of both major political parties are, by and large, subservient to the very industries they are supposed to be regulating to protect their constituents. If you grew up in the U.S., you've probably used to hearing endless adulation toward the so-called Founding Fathers, the group of white men, many of them slave owners, who authored the documents that became the foundation for the U.S. government. Many of our teachers, politicians, and even Supreme Court justices would have us believe that every word these men wrote almost 250 years ago remains sacrosanct, wisdom for the ages. Well, allow me for a moment to appeal to these people. The word corporation does not appear anywhere in the U.S. Constitution. It begins, "we the people," not "we the corporations." And yet, over the last few decades, corporations essentially have been given personhood by the judicial system, that is, having the same legal rights as an individual human person. This was exemplified and perhaps finalized by the 2010 Citizens United decision, in which the Supreme Court ruled that money is the same thing as speech, opening the door for unlimited campaign contributions. Corporations and billionaires effectively own and control our government through lobbyists, campaign contributions, and a system of what can be called legalized bribery. It is this fundamental crisis of democracy that America more closely resembles an oligarchy that allow the other problems I listed to go unaddressed. If you're still listening at this point, I salute you. Just keeping up with current events can be enough to test the limits of one's mental health. Self-care, taking time out for yourself, or just doing things you enjoy are paramount in these daunting times. There is one fundamental truth this program is founded on, and that is that there is power in our numbers. There are far more of us than there are of them, the relatively small number of powerful people whose decisions directly impact our lives and shape the world we live in. There is a reason that so many slogans and phrases exist that speak to that same concept. History is full of examples of people coming together to defeat concentrated power for a greater good. Whether we're talking about revolutions or movements in the United States or any other country, throughout history, people have always found a way to do this. We now find ourselves at another pivotal moment in history. Only two decades into the 21st century, we're still in the infancy of what might be called the digital age. Getting back to what this podcast is about, it's really about asking the question, what is the way forward? Where do we go from here? We have seemingly infinite problems and a government that's been so corrupted that it's been rendered incapable of addressing any of our most pressing issues adequately. What is the way forward? I don't really know, but it definitely does not look like what we have been doing for the last several decades. The only thing I do know is that it will involve the coordinated actions of many, many people. My belief is that what is required now is a cultural shift where civic engagement becomes common, mainstream, and as widespread as possible. The way forward is likely not just one thing, it's probably many things, but it definitely will involve great numbers of people coming together to make the changes we want to see. So on this program, we're going to explore what some of those ways might be. Some might be in the realm of electoral politics from a purely nonpartisan perspective, while others might be in the realm of community organizing and direct action. I want to keep a fairly open mind about what the best potential avenues for change might be. The content going forward will be mostly in interview format. If it were just me babbling all the time, it wouldn't be very interesting or informative, and it would also be very hard to produce. There are three main goals I have for this podcast. Number one, to increase civic engagement of working people everywhere and address barriers to this, including lack of free time people have to commit to such activities, and also understanding what the effective strategies for change are. Two, we will highlight real stories of civic actions that are currently taking place and having a positive impact. Ideally, we might even facilitate some of these actions. And three, I hope to inspire others to create their own media, as I believe a vibrant independent media landscape will be vital to our future. Civic Tsunami is 100% independent and not affiliated with any political party. Thanks for listening, and I'll see you in the next episode.